Yes, thanks, Alessia. Thanks to you and Mark for putting together this amazing conference. And also thank you for making it possible that I could give my talk remotely. I would have very much liked to be there at PI to also discuss with the others in person, but that's basically impossible to reconcile with teaching and other responsibilities. And so I hope it will also be possible to have some discussions over Zoom or by email. I'm certainly very happy for anyone who has a question or a comment on what I'm going to say to just send an email to me, and we can also then discuss. So I'll give you sort of my personal point of view on the current status of the asymptotic safety paradigm for quantum gravity, and I'll highlight three points or three challenges in particular in the second part. So let's just jump right in with what asymptotic safety actually is. The key assumptions that are made in this approach to quantum gravity are that the metric or an equivalent basically field carries the fundamental degrees of freedom, and that the correct framework for the quantization is the path integral framework in its standard form, and that path integral should lead to a predictive theory, so it should be parameterized in terms of a finite number of free parameters. And these two assumptions combined then lead to quantum scale symmetry or asymptotic safety, to an asymptotically safe to an ultraviolet fixed point of the renormalization group flow that is now often called the Reuter fixed point. So let me spell out in a bit more detail how these two assumptions result in requiring quantum scale symmetry. If we put these two assumptions into a perturbative quantization of the framework, quantization of gravity based on the Einstein-Hilbert action, then we're encountering perturbative non-renormalizability, and that technical problem is really a physical problem in the sense that it leads to a breakdown of predictivity, because we have to introduce all interactions which are compatible with the symmetries, and each one comes with its own free parameter, namely the coupling in front of it. And the solution to that is quantum scale symmetry, because sort of very intuitively speaking, whenever you impose an additional symmetry on a Lagrangian on an action, then it reduces the number of free parameters because it relates couplings to each other. And quantum scale symmetry does that in a very particular way, because it corresponds to a scale invariant regime, to a renormalization group fixed point that is approached, or that is the microscopic regime of the theory. And from such a renormalization group fixed point, you can only flow away in the space of couplings along the relevant directions, because in the other directions, quantum fluctuations actually drive you back towards scale symmetry. So most directions are such that scale symmetry is generated by quantum fluctuations. There are only finitely many directions along which scale symmetry can be broken by the so-called relevant interactions. And so therefore, if you have a theory that where the microscopic regime is described by an interacting fixed point, the corresponding infrared theory or effective theory has to live on a finite dimensional surface in the space of couplings. And so this is how this requirement of quantum scale symmetry makes this framework predictive. Now, what is the status of this idea in quantum gravity, and what are the open challenges? For more details on that, I'll also refer you to this critical review article of the state of the art in the field. But for the purposes of this talk, I've decided to use a traffic light that goes all the way from red for a completely unsolved problem through orange when there is some idea of what the solution could be, through yellow when the proposal is supported by some studies, through a light green when there is more support for some result or solution, to green or dark green, which is a largely answered problem. And of course, this traffic light is really a sort of very subjective way of reviewing the status of the field. Other people will probably use different colors than I do. So let's get started with the use of this traffic light. The first point, of course, is the evidence for an asymptotically safe fixed point. And I very briefly want to just flash a few keywords on the method that is used, which is the functional renormalization group. And that method actually allows us to integrate out fluctuations in the path integral as a function of a scale k that acts as an infrared cutoff. Everything above is integrated out. Everything below is still waiting to integrate out. And then, of course, from such a tool, you can discover whether or not there's scale symmetry encoded in zeros of the beta functions. And also, if you have a scale symmetric regime in the UV, you can then understand what the corresponding infrared dynamics will be. Note, this will be important later. This is a method that works for the Euclidean path integral. Now, based on this method, there are way more than 100 studies by now, so several hundreds that vary all sorts of aspects of what is accounted for in the study and that very robustly show an asymptotically safe fixed point. For instance, they vary the number of on the type of included interactions, and they also vary various aspects of the calculation that are not physical, that are auxiliary choices of the scheme, of the background metric, or of the gauge parameters, and where you would expect that if such an asymptotically safe fixed point is really physical or robust, then of course these choices shouldn't matter for the existence of the fixed point, and indeed they don't. And so the asymptotically safe fixed point, the evidence for that therefore gets a dark green traffic light from me. Now, what we actually really care about in quantum gravity is not just defining or constructing a mathematical theory of quantum fluctuations of gravity, but one that actually describes quantum fluctuations of gravity in our universe. And so therefore, we have to actually look at the evidence for an asymptotically safe fixed point in the presence of matter, and at least standard model matter, the matter that we know. That gets a light green from me because it is also quite robust in many studies that have been done. But this is a bit more of a sort of recent research line than the pure gravity fixed point. And so therefore, there are just fewer studies and they don't go to the same amount of included interactions, for instance, in the gravitational sector. Then once we have evidence for a fixed point, we would, of course, like to understand its properties. And one of the key properties of this fixed point is that it has a near perturbative scaling spectrum, which actually means that it only deviates as far from the Gaussian fixed point as it needs to in order to exist. And that means that most of the scaling dimensions are very, very close to the canonical ones. And that also means that an interaction that is of higher order in just canonical power counting is very likely to also be an irrelevant direction and not a free parameter of the theory. And therefore, the number of free parameters seems to be quite small. It's just 3 to the best of our knowledge, linked to the Newton coupling cosmological constant and a superposition of curvature squared couplings. And then if we have these free parameters in the theory, then of course, one of the questions is whether we can use these free parameters to connect to classical gravity in the infrared. And indeed, the answer seems to be positive in the sense that the measured value of the Newton coupling and the cosmological constant, they are both reachable along a particular fixed point trajectory. So the corresponding free parameters can indeed be adjusted to exactly the values that you need in order to reproduce the measured values of these two couplings. Then a phenomenological question that we care about is, of course, what the implications for particle physics is and whether this idea is compatible with a viable phenomenology for particle physics. And this is one of the challenges that I'll go into in a bit more detail. So just as a summary, this is another thing that gets a light green in the traffic light. Then we move on to the yellow region of the traffic light in the question of what happens to curvature singularities. It's, of course, a key requirement of any quantum theory of gravity that it resolves curvature singularities. And there are indications that that happens from various perspectives. First of all, you can construct black holes via renormalization group improvement. That is not a derivation from an action principle, but it is starting from a classical metric and then incorporating the renormalization group dependence of the coupling. So I would call these black holes inspired by asymptotic safety, definitely not derived. But they typically turn out to be regular, so curvature invariants are actually finite. There is more evidence for the resolution of curvature singularities, one of which comes from a mechanism of dynamical suppression in the Lorentzian path integral. Namely, if you have the Lorentzian path integral and then configurations on which the action diverges, then these configurations will interfere destructively, and you can get the action to diverge on singular black holes if you include higher order curvature invariants, like for instance the Kretschmann scalar, which are invariants that you expect to be present in asymptotic safety and where indeed calculations do show non-zero fixed point values. And so this is then a mechanism how singular black hole configurations can interfere away in the Lorentzian path integral. And I'll come back to this point of dynamical suppression later in the talk when I talk about global symmetries. Now, the next yellow bit on the traffic light is the question of how does this idea actually connect to some of the other quantum gravity approaches? And this is one of the challenges I would like to address in more detail in the spirit of this meeting, actually. And then we come to the orange parts of the traffic light, one of which is the question of what are the actual propagating degrees of freedom and is the theory stable or not? And that question is important because the fixed point action or also the effective action features higher order curvature invariants, which have non-zero couplings and asymptotic safety. And generically, of course, higher order time derivatives lead to the Ostrogradsky instability or to an unbounded Hamiltonian. In the quantum theory, that is then typically rephrased as non-unitarity. However, there are several important caveats to that. One is, for instance, that this only holds if the Hamiltonian is non-degenerate. And so, for instance, you can build higher order scalar tensor theories of gravity, so-called DOS theories, which have some of these higher order time derivatives. There's also the question of looking at an actual entire function, which goes to arbitrary higher order in the time derivatives, but it's really an entire function, only has or an analytical function except for the single graviton pole, whereas the expansion of that function will generically have instabilities. And of course, these ideas of an entire function are what is used in sort of non-local gravity approaches. Then it can also be that you have unstable modes in the theory, but there is a mechanism for how they decouple, for instance, in part of parameter space or for an appropriately constructed dynamics. And then the last important caveat that I would like to mention is that these instabilities can also just signal that there's an instability around a particular choice of vacuum or ground state of the theory. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot have a sort of more non-trivial ground state of the theory around which the theory is actually stable. Another important aspect related to this question is that it's very difficult to answer it because generically, if you take a theory that is unitary and you look at its effective action and then you expand that to finite order and derivatives, you will see fake instabilities. And so therefore, actually, you need to go beyond finitely many terms in the effective action to meaningfully answer that question. And that is what makes it a technically challenging problem. There are, however, examples of propagators for the graviton, basically, which satisfy all of the requirements that you would like them to satisfy. And Alessia has a very nice paper where she reviews these proposals. Overall, this is really one of the pressing open questions, which is why it gets an orange in the traffic light of that assigns sort of what is the status of this question. And moving on to the other orange part, that's Lorentzian signature. So when I briefly reviewed the functional RG, I told you that it's a technique that works in Euclidean signature, but of course, for gravity, we can't just analytically continue in a very straightforward way. And so we really need to look at the Lorentzian theory separately. There are by now first studies that looked at just the Einstein-Hilbert term and the flow of the couplings in Lorentzian signature and find an asymptotically safe fixed point. But of course, this is not yet the same amount of robust evidence that there is in a Euclidean regime. And of course, you can also think about other methods, causal dynamical triangulations being one of them that Renate will review after me. So this traffic light sort of summarizes the status of the theory, at least from my point of view. Other practitioners of this approach will probably give you slightly different traffic lights. So what I would like to do after this lightning review of the status is to address three challenges in a bit more detail. And the one challenge that I'll start with is the phenomenology. So how do we test this particular theory of quantum gravity? But also, how do we test quantum gravity more broadly? and as one aspect that will then lead me to the question, what is the status of global symmetries? That was, of course, also raised by Miguel yesterday in the Swampland talk. And then this again leads me to the broader question, what is the connection to something like the Swampland program, but also more broadly to other quantum gravity approaches? So let's get started with the first challenge. How do we test asymptotically safe gravity? And of course, the challenge is extremely well understood. It's a separation of scales between the scales that we're interested in, where we're building our theory, and then the scales where in various areas of fundamental physics, particle physics, black holes, and cosmology, we do have access to experimental data. At a first glance, of course, it seems like this gap in scales makes it impossible to test theories. However, it's not true that that is the case. By now, we know that we can exclude models. So this is sort of following swamplandish type of ideas, because there are models in particle physics or also in cosmology which are simply incompatible with a UV completion within asymptotic safety. And I'll tell you about some of those. And also models which are in principle compatible with the UV completion might still be constrained. In particular, the parameters of the model, so the coupling constants, can be constrained by requiring asymptotic safety. And of course, this second aspect in particular seems somewhat counterintuitive, because you could well wonder why the low energy theory should actually be sensitive to the high energy theory. Usually when we sort of zoom out to construct an effective theory from a microscopic one, we lose information. And indeed, there are many examples for a sort of universality of the infrared theory where microscopic information is sort of washed out by the RG flow. This is just one example here. So this is a higher order phi to the sixth coupling of a scalar theory, where the initial condition at the Planck scale is chosen to be four different values. And you can see these four curves differ in the UV regime, but then are very quickly driven towards one universal curve. And that means that this is an example where this intuition holds true, that the microscopic information is not imprinted on the effective field theory, and the effective theory where you can make measurements down here at these energies, this is not something that will be able to, that will actually inform you about what the microscopic underlying theory is. There are, however, also couplings that depend on the RG scale only logarithmically. And here, if you change the value at the Planck scale by a little bit, that corresponds to a change at observable scales that is measurable. And so you can sort of think as this logarithmic running as a lever arm, where you take effects at a tiny scale, the quantum gravity scale, and then the logarithmic running translates that into effects at a much larger scale. And so in this way, you can test predictions that arise at the Planck scale by making observations at the electroweak scale. And so this brings me to a quick review of what we know about the asymptotically safe standard model with gravity. This figure here basically summarizes it. What you can see is the couplings, or a subset of the couplings in the standard model and gravity, driven by quantum fluctuations of the standard model fields and also the metric. And under the combined effect of these quantum fluctuations, the theory is asymptotically safe all the way above the Planck scale, which means that couplings are either constant or approach an asymptotically free fixed point. At the Planck scale, gravity decouples dynamically. You can see this by the dimensionless Newton coupling dropping to zero. This is what it has to do in order to get you to a classical gravity regime. And the key thing is that because of the requirement of quantum scale symmetry above, the values of some of the couplings in the standard model at the Planck scale are either fixed uniquely or there are upper bounds that they can have. And then below the Planck scale, they just run logarithmically driven by the quantum fluctuations of the standard model fields. And this prediction or upper bound is then translated into a corresponding prediction or upper bound at experimentally accessible scales. Now, what is the mechanism that generates these predictions or upper bounds? It's summarized in this toy model plot here. So here you have a beta function for a coupling that has an anti-screening and a screening term. And these two balance out to give you an asymptotically safe fixed point. But because the way that this anti-screening and screening term are arranged, it also means that quantum fluctuations always drive you towards scale symmetry, even if you depart from it a little bit. And now if you imagine that one set of these quantum fluctuations is the gravitational fluctuations, then whenever you wanted to depart from this particular value with the coupling above the Planck scale, quantum fluctuations would always just drive you back to the special value, to the fixed point value. And only when the quantum gravitational fluctuations decouple does one side of this sort of balancing go away, and then the couplings can actually start to depart from the fixed point value and go to some other value of the coupling. And so this story that there is a unique prediction seems to be realized for some, not for all of the standard model couplings. That story started with the Higgs quartic coupling, and that was predicted actually before the measurement of the Higgs mass. And the prediction results or the prediction comes from requiring that scale symmetry gives you a vanishing quarter coupling at the Planck scale, and that translates into a Higgs mass that is a few GeV away from the experimental value. But it has to be said that, of course, the values at the Planck scale that you can calculate in asymptotic safety come with quite a bit of systematic uncertainty. And so that uncertainty is generically expected to be larger than the few GeV deviation. Now, the same or a similar story appears to hold for the abelian gauge coupling. So here, this is one of those couplings that realizes exactly this blueprint of anti-screening effects from quantum gravity and screening effects from matter. So in fact, this FG I don't want to go into details about here, that is what parameterizes the effect of quantum gravity fluctuations, and it's present only above the Planck scale. And so above the Planck scale, these two terms balance out and generate asymptotic safety. Below the Planck scale, this FG term drops away, and then the screening effect of matter kicks in. So you get a unique prediction from requiring asymptotic safety, and at the same time, that acts as an upper bound on all of those trajectories which reach asymptotic freedom under the impact of quantum gravity. And so in summary, you get a prediction of an upper bound on the value of the abelian gauge coupling. And there is a similar story for the top quark Yukawa coupling that also satisfies this blueprint. And as a consequence, there's an upper bound on the top quark Yukawa or the top quark mass that arises from asymptotic safety. Now, what is the status of these postdictions or upper bounds? They all come out to be in the vicinity of the experimental results. They are also subject to quite large systematic uncertainties. And so this means that currently the status is that there is a proof of principle that you could rule out this theory. However, whether or not it is ruled out actually depends on getting control of these large systematic uncertainties and going towards quantitative precision, which is basically a question of increasing the order of the approximations in the calculation. But of course, the fact that you can actually predict or calculate some of the values in the standard model also means that there could be similar predictive power for beyond the standard model physics. And this makes it interesting to look at extensions of the standard model. And here I'll just shine a very brief spotlight on what we know about dark matter from an asymptotically safe perspective. Of course, the challenge about dark matter is that we don't really know much about it. In particular, there is a huge range in masses where dark matter could lie. And it will be very interesting to see whether asymptotic safety can serve as a new theoretical principle that gives us a more unique prediction for dark matter. So the ideal situation in some sense is if we could show that a lot of these phenomenological dark matter candidates are simply incompatible with asymptotic safety, and the asymptotically safe landscape really turns out to be quite small. And there are some indications that that could work. For instance, the axion-like particle-photon coupling vanishes. The Higgs portal to a single dark scalar is excluded. The Higgs portal to a dark scalar with a dark gauge charge is also excluded. That's current work in progress with collaborators from here. And the Higgs portal to extended dark sectors with several dark fields is strongly constrained. And so you see that we currently don't yet have an answer to what is dark matter in the asymptotic safety paradigm. We have several answers for what it cannot be. And I think this is quite interesting predictive power, and it will be interesting to explore whether that continues to hold for other dark matter models and whether we can really arrive at a very small class of dark matter models that are compatible with asymptotic safety. But this is where it now becomes also interesting to think about properties of dark matter more in general, and instead of going model by model, asking whether we can say something more generic. And of course, what many phenomenological models of dark matter do is to use global symmetries to stabilize the dark matter candidates. And as we heard in Miguel's talk yesterday, global symmetries are expected to not be realized in quantum gravity. So does this actually mean that all of the dark matter models that use global symmetries can automatically be excluded? So for this, we come to the second challenge, namely, what is the status of global symmetries in asymptotic safety? And I'd briefly like to review a sort of intuitive understanding of the no global symmetries conjecture, which basically says black hole spacetimes violate the conservation of global charges because you can throw in a particle with a global charge. Then that global charge is, of course, still present in the spacetime in the interior of the black hole. But if the black hole then undergoes complete Hawking evaporation, then of course the global chart has disappeared from the space-time. And now in a second step, if you assume that the gravity-matter path integral actually contains black hole configurations as part of these configurations that you're integrating over here, then if you construct the effective theory for matter by integrating out gravity, then this effective action for matter shouldn't have conserved global charges, and instead it should just have all possible interactions that break the global charges, global symmetries potentially suppressed by the Planck scale. So that's the general story. What's the status in asymptotic safety? Well, quite interestingly, a large number of explicit calculations actually show that you do not get interactions which violate the global symmetries of the matter fields. So this has been tested for matter fields of different spins, has been tested for different global symmetries, and it's always the case that the global symmetry that you start with in the matter action, when you then calculate the effect of quantum gravity fluctuations, you do get new interactions which gravity induces, but these interactions all satisfy the global symmetries. There are no interactions that break the global symmetry. So that's the status of explicit calculations. So how does this fit to the general understanding? I think there are at least three possibilities for what could be going on here. One is that the calculations here, they are of course done within certain approximations. And in particular, they are also done with the functional RG, so in Euclidean signature. So that could actually mean that the black hole configurations which lead to the violation of global symmetries, that they are not yet adequately accounted for in these calculations. That is a possibility because these calculations are done within certain truncations and in Euclidean signature. A second possibility is that what is not true in asymptotic safety is this idea of complete Hawking evaporation. There could potentially be remnants. There is an indication for that, namely that the asymptotic safety inspired black holes that can be built from renormalization group improvement, they have vanishing Hawking temperature at Planckian mass. So that would indicate that the evaporation stops and that you indeed have Planck-sized remnants. Whether or not that solves that problem and whether or not the remnants are viable in themselves, that is a completely open question. And then the third possibility is that what is not true about this general argument is that, in fact, black hole configurations are part of the path integral. And I already mentioned this in the beginning when I talked about this, the status of curvature singularities, that if you include these higher order curvature terms in the action, which you generically expect in asymptotic safety, they will diverge for singular black holes. And if you have a divergent action, then you generically expect destructive interference between these configurations.
You have a 5-ish minutes left.
Yes, thank you. So this is the story for singular black holes. There are also higher order curvature interactions that remove some regular black holes. And we are currently thinking about an extension of this argument that would actually remove any object that has a black hole horizon. And so this is the third possibility that where the general argument could break is in this assumption that black holes indeed contribute to the path integral. Overall, this question, what is the status of global symmetries, is a phenomenologically, I would say, quite pressing one. And it's also, it will be quite interesting to see how it will resolve, whether this distinction between asymptotic safety and the general expectation persists or not. And this then leads me to the last challenge, because the no global symmetries conjecture is, of course, part of this largely string-inspired swarmplant program. And then, of course, it's really interesting to understand what is the relation of sort of different landscapes or swarmplants of different quantum gravity theories to each other. So if we look at the asymptotically safe or unsafe swarmplant and the stringy swarmplant, one thing that you can do is to explicitly go through the stringy swarmplant conjecture and ask what is their status in asymptotic safety. One of them, for instance, is the de Sitter conjecture, which basically says that potentials have to have a certain steepness. They cannot be too flat, so that prohibits de Sitter vacua. The asymptotically safe view on that is that that doesn't hold. A cosmological constant, in particular, of correct size is compatible with asymptotic safety, and in particular also of the correct sign. But then, of course, you can still ask, can you also have dark energy in asymptotic safety in a form of dynamical dark energy through an additional field? And it's quite interesting that not everything goes. So we have similar predictive power to the dark matter sector. And just as one example, the very simplest Tondesky model of dark energy is actually excluded. It is not compatible with asymptotic safety. Then a second conjecture that also Miguel highlighted yesterday is the weak gravity conjecture that basically says that gravity has to be the weakest force. The asymptotically safe view on that is that this inequality could be realized if you use that. Indeed, you can go to a fixed point where the abelian gauge coupling or the electromagnetic charge is non-zero. But in order to realize this inequality, you actually get a constraint on the fixed point properties. And then going beyond testing these stringy swampland conjectures, you can of course ask, is there a more direct way to connect to string theory directly? And we've made a proposal how that could work, which basically says that if the fundamental theory of quantum gravity is string theory, then of course to connect to the real world down here, there has to be some scale at which you transition to a description through a quantum field theory. And that quantum field theory could be an asymptotically safe quantum field theory. So then you get an effective asymptotically safe scaling regime, and then you transition to the standard model at low energies. One thing that is quite interesting about this proposal is that generically, if you have sufficiently many metafields, that you expect the fixed point value for the cosmological constant to be negative. And you only go to positive cosmological constant quite late in the RG flow on one of these trajectories that go from negative to positive lambda. And so at the scale where you make the transition from string theory to a quantum field theory, you could still be in an ADS regime, as seems to be preferred by string theory, and then transition to the observed de Sitter regime at very, very low energies. And that is something that you could potentially get through such an asymptotically safe scaling regime in between. And of course, more broadly, you can also ask what's the connection of asymptotic safety to other approaches. And this general idea, of course, you can propose for any theory of quantum gravity. You basically then conjecture that asymptotic safety could be even a universal intermediate regime of quantum gravity in this sort of effective form where you have fixed point scaling over a finite range of scales. But this is something that hasn't been worked out in more detail for any other theories, but maybe this workshop is the appropriate venue to get ideas and discussions on this relation started. And so with this, I'm coming to my summary slide, which I would like to flash and not go through through all of the points on the slide again, just to leave you with the fact that there is an asymptotically safe sort of traffic light of what is the status of the theory. Some things we know quite well, some things we know less well, and then there are some things which are pressing open challenges. And I highlighted some of the open challenges, in particular those that relate to phenomenology in particle physics and the corresponding conjectures on the status of symmetries and connection to other approaches. And now I'm very much looking forward to questions.
We have time for one or two questions, Miguel.
Thank you. Thanks for the super interesting talk. I have lots of questions, can I ask you about the global symmetry story? You said there's evidence in asymptotic safety that they are preserved in the RG flow. Did you check continuous symmetries or discrete symmetries? Or is there any check
So both. There's lots of examples with sort of, for instance, discrete Zn symmetries, but also continuous symmetries. So things like On symmetries or U1 symmetries. And you can also make a sort of more general argument based on the structure of the flow equation, why you would actually expect that generically happens.
Right. So then I just wanted to make a quick comment about your possibility three, that the black holes are dynamically suppressed from the path integral. I think there's at least, you know, it's very particular, but there's a particular supersymmetric examples in string theory where we compute quantum corrections to couplings and we sum over all states, including black hole states. And including black hole states, the black hole states make a non-zero contribution and they are essential to, you know, get consistency with duality. So I think there's at least some examples where possibility three at least is not realized. Thank you.
Hi, I had a question about curvature singularity. So I think what you showed is that there are some black hole solutions in your models which don't have singularities. But many years ago, we looked at simple initial data evolution, like dust balls and such. And if you, you know, if even if you make optimistic assumptions about approach to asymptotic safety, you still find curvature singularities developing in those evolutions of initial data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so let me stress what I said about black hole spacetimes here is not really solutions of the dynamics, right? It's sort of asymptotic safety inspired black holes, or in some sense sort of toy models, which are built with the renormalization group improvement. And of course, most of those are stationary. Gravitational collapse has to some extent also been analyzed with renormalization group improvement. And also shows that you can, in principle, lift the curvature singularity. Of course, that also does not mean that the spacetime becomes geodesically complete. So with a lot of these regular black holes, what actually happens is that the spacetime at r larger than zero is then geodesically incomplete, even though there is no curvature singularity, and it then needs to be extended into basically something like a wormhole geometry. So what I think that means is that overall we do not yet have a satisfactory and complete understanding of what black hole spacetimes really look like in asymptotic safety, and whether they are really free of all sorts of artifacts in the sense of curvature singularities, geodesic incompleteness, but also things like wormhole geometries or the status of Cauchy horizons. So overall, it's quite challenging to really construct a fully consistent black hole spacetime, and I don't think that has been satisfactorily achieved in asymptotic safety yet.